Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest had her first work published in her grade school yearbook. It was a letter she wrote from the viewpoint of John F. Kennedy in heaven just after his assassination. Her first novel, titled The Third Grace, won the Word Guild's Grace Irwin Award in 2012, and her most recent work, Roots and Branches, is a look at the symbol of the tree in the works of G.K. Chesterton. Deb Elkink was in Ontario recently for the annual Write Canada Writers Conference, where she was again a Word Award winner, and we'll be talking to her in a few minutes about her latest work. But before we get our conversation with Deb, let's listen to The Mystery from the Riddles and Creeds CD by the Nicole Ensing Band.
Clouds could grow on trees, it would but match the May in flower. And if the skies be underneath the seas, would be no stranger than a shower. If sunset clouds could grow on trees, it would but match the
now to our interview with author Deb Elkink. Good evening, Deb.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Now, it's been a couple of years since we've talked on this program, so maybe give our listeners, especially the new ones, a chance to get to know you a little bit better again. Let's go back to the beginning. I talked about in the intro that you started by sending a letter about John F. Kennedy to your school yearbook. What was going through your mind when you saw that it was being published?
Well, I was nine. That was a long time ago. I was a little tickled. I thought this is so nice that somebody is going to read this, and they're gonna like it, and they're gonna think maybe Deb, you know, maybe, well, they called me Debbie back then. Please don't call me that now. Maybe Debbie has some insight to something, and we want to know what that is. So I guess I wanted to catch the attention of readers, and I wanted them to say, oh, she can write poetry.
Well, in doing that and going from that sort of inauspicious start to now you've won a couple of awards for your writing, walk us through that journey. How did you get from there to where you are now?
I think at age nine, I had a discussion with myself. I was a little bit older when I had a discussion with my mom, who is an artist, who encouraged me to follow my heart. I said, well, wouldn't it be good if I were a doctor? And she said, oh, follow your heart. What would really, you know, be exciting to you? What would be fulfilling to you? She said if you didn't have to worry about money and you didn't have to worry about education or anything, what would you do? And I said I would like to be a writer, and that was in high school. So I set my cap for that, and I started going after that. I had lots of encouragement through high school by teachers that saw that I loved to write. I loved words. I loved to talk. I loved anything to do with words. Poor teachers to listen to me talk so much. But I ended up registering for college in Minyapa, St. Paul area. I went to a Christian college there called Bethel College, and it's now which is now a university. And I started studying mostly like various types of communication, but mostly I was influenced by Elvira Mickle, or Michelson rather, and her husband's name was Berkeley. And Elvira and Berkeley, he was a seminary professor, and they wrote together. They wrote several quite influential books. And I finished at Bethel, but not in the I should have been able to do it in 3 years, because I've got a year of credit at home, and then went on and studied there. But I got married and stopped out for a little while. It took me several years before I finished all my courses by correspondence after being married and having kids. And about the time I was ready to pitch into writing again and really start selling, which I had started at the first year, a couple of years of college, I'd still had a couple of things published, short stories, maybe a dozen short stories and articles and so on. But when the babies came, and I wrote around the bottles, or I actually didn't give them bottles, but I wrote around the diapers, and so on, and finally finished my last credits needed for my undergraduate degree, and I was about to pitch in really full-time to writing. We ended up deciding that we would homeschool the kids, and I just didn't have enough energy to do both. All of my creative energy went into homeschooling my kids. Now, meanwhile, by the way, I had married not anybody from Minneapolis, where I had gone to school, not anybody from Winnipeg, where I'd grown up, but somebody from the depths of this great sandhills in Saskatchewan who ranched. So I became a co-owner of a ranch, a cattle ranch, quite a large one. I learned how to fly an airplane to round up cattle, although I didn't actually do the rounding up. I learned how to cook for Brandon crews of 100, and then I learned to ride a horse and yell at little calves and cows and so on. So I had a lot filling my life at that point. So finally, when my youngest was ready to go to school herself, go to high school, it doesn't matter, and I decided I would go with her. And I enrolled as well myself in a graduate program for historical theology, and this was at Briarcrest Seminary in Saskatchewan. And I that's when I started, and I used that to kickstart my writing and get me back on track for my plan to write fiction. And in the meantime, I wrote a lot of nonfiction.
Well, looking at that, I'm going to go back to one thing you said at the beginning, and that was your mother was an artist, and she gave you a lot of encouragement in terms of that. And I've talked to a lot of artists over the years, and there's varying stories, and some of them have the stories where the parents kind of wanted to discourage them from going into the artistic fields because of the poor starving artist image that some people have. Others had parents that encouraged them. What difference did it make for you to have parents that encouraged you to follow your heart and follow what you felt was your gifting and your calling as a writer?
They always say, if you're a writer, you write. You just have to write. I don't think that a writer has to write. I think a writer chooses to write just like a doctor chooses to doctor, or a radio personality that sets up a radio station and a radio program. It's not that I don't think that there's something special about the arts. I love the arts, but it's one expression of life, and I don't think that it's more important, or that there are some that are more important than others. the money issue is something that I think writers have to realize, artists have to realize, that they're probably, not necessarily, but probably not going to be able to make their living at it. And I was so blessed to have family support. As I got married, my husband and the lifestyle that we lived on the ranch left me with time and the ability and to not have to make, you know, a whole bunch of money. Of course, as any artist, my mom would love to make lots of money. She's an incredibly prolific artist, even to this day. And I would like to make a lot of money. Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't you, Robert? I mean, everybody knows that it's difficult to make to make a living at it. Maybe that'll change someday. But I was happy that my mom and dad encouraged me to go into the arts. And I think it's because of my mother's great satisfaction in doing art that she wished that great satisfaction on me as well. And that was a lovely gift that I got from her.
Well, what I need to do is take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Deb Elkink. And we're going to talk about her latest work, Roots and Branches, The Symbol of the Tree in the Imagination of G.K. Chesterton. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Little Infinity from the Riddles and Creed CD by the Nicole Ensing Band, and that band has taken the poetry of G.K. Chesterton and set it to music. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Deb Elkink. Deb, what led to the writing of Roots and Branches?
I had entered seminary. I had found a teacher that I wanted to tuck myself under, having not declared my major right away. And he was a historical, he taught historical theology, and that's what I decided to go into. His name was Dr. Bruce Hindmarsh, and he is now with Regent College in Vancouver. And I just loved how he taught and what he taught, and suddenly, I was not a historian. Like, I didn't necessarily like history in school, but he made history, the course of studying church history, made history make sense to me. I finally loved history and understood a reason for studying it. It gave me all the hooks I needed. It was fascinating to me. So I took, you know, several years of classes that were amazing, and enlarging to me. And during the course of that time, came across Chesterton. I didn't know who he was before that. And so this was only in like the turn of the century. Doesn't that sound like a long time ago? The turn of the century. I read The Everlasting Man by Chesterton, and I thought, this is really amazing stuff. And then I thought, oh, I'd like to study this guy some more, and realized that not a lot of work had been done on only his fiction. A lot of people had written for a long time about orthodoxy and heretics and all sorts of interesting nonfiction books. And for example, 5,000 articles that he wrote for the London Daily Papers. Can you imagine writing that much, Robert?
Sort of.
You do, maybe.
I'm trying to think of over the years how many articles I would have written, but yes.
So I thought, you know, I'd like to learn more about him, and I don't have time to read all of his stuff now. So I thought, I think what I'll do is focus on his fiction, and that's how I kind of honed in on deciding that I would research and do some literary analysis on G.K. Chesterton. And so this book, Roots and Branches, came out of my research that I did at that time of my graduate work.
Now, what is it about Chesterton that makes you keep returning to his works? And you said you studied more his fiction as opposed to some of the nonfiction. And he was vast. I mean, he wrote plays. He wrote, as you mentioned, articles for the London newspapers, London England newspapers. He wrote fiction. He wrote poetry. I mean, he was all over the map in terms of genre. But what was it about his works that kept you going back to him?
He is symbolic, and that people all talk about how paradoxical he is. And he's paradoxical. He says one thing, and then he says the opposite, and he makes sense both ways. So he's paradoxical. He was paradoxical in his thinking and in his writing. But there was more to it than that. He was trying to say something through his fiction that was at a different level. So I was looking at the enigma of his work and thinking, how can I untangle this? What is it that he's doing that so I wanted to know so that I could know? Because he was such a profoundly Christian writer, and yet his stories were not necessarily religious. The Father Brown series, of course, of short stories, the ones that are being redone now for BBC, they were religious, quote unquote, in the idea of having his main character a parish priest. But there were lots of stories where it wasn't outright religious, and yet he was saying religious things, and that's what really got me going on in his works. Enigmatic, and he's meaning something metaphysical when he's saying that. So I thought, okay, how can I do this? And so I noted, and I couldn't untangle it right away, but I noted that he used all sorts of kind of crazy objects, concrete objects in his books or in his fiction. So I focused on the tree. He did it with other things too, I'm sure, but I focused on the tree. I said, let me go through all of his fiction and see where trees and forests and so on come into the fore. Where are they being used? How is he using them? So I started by looking at his childhood and seeing how trees were influential. And they were. He made a point of noting how trees influenced his life. The garden. Do you remember in Orthodoxy about how... excuse me. He talked about peeping his head over the hedge into Wonderland or mm-hmm. Fairyland or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you remember that section?
Mm-hmm.
So it even started way back then, and there was a lot of like physical talk of trees and how they entered his life. And then as he went on to write the fiction, he placed trees in various ways throughout the work. And I'm not saying that I know for sure that he did every one of them consciously. But some of them I know he did near the end, that he was maybe starting to see the symbolism that he himself had created around the image of a tree that came to mean various things. So in part one of my book, I end up telling what the symbols meant in some of the stories. Of course, we can never say for sure what was in the mind of the writer, but we can do literary analysis to see how how themes come out in the work, right? So,
well, we got just a couple of minutes before break, but and you take a couple of hundred pages to unwrap this, but can you give us a real quick sort of the Reader's Digest version of what do trees represent in Chesterton symbolism?
In his symbolism, they represent in the stories that I was studying, they represent the home of humanity as a true identity. They represent a tree. They represent a person. The person, it becomes an articulate tree. The tree bearing light is a strong picture in a lot of the stories. As a ladder, that it emerges in his childhood tales already. And then he talks about characters scaling trees for escape, protection, and sanctuary from enemies, and even entering into the paradise of a garden. And then, of course, the cross. The cross is intimated, even in the very earliest ones, and connected to the tree. So in the main part of my book, that's what I talk about. But the part two of the book, which was a standalone article that's been included in this book, talks about something at an even deeper level, and that is where I believe that Chesterton uses the picture of one character, a fictional character in one chapter, to show a fictional narrative of Chesterton's own spiritual conversion. And I think that the forest is a backdrop that allows Chesterton to play out this scenario. And I don't think anybody has ever discussed that before. In fact, Dale Ahlquist, who writes the foreword, one of the forewords for this book, and who is the president of the Chesterton Society in the state, in the United States and around the world, with at least 85 chapters, Dale Ahlquist said about this, particularly about the article, that it was a penetrating analysis and that it was something that had not been done before. So that was kind of fun to read him saying that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we need to take one final break, and when we do, after we come back, we'll finish our conversation with author Deb Elkink. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to The Rolling English Road from the Riddles and Creed CD by the Nicole Ensing Band. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Deb Elkink. Deb, what's been the response to Roots and Branches so far?
Well, it's been good from some of the reviewers or some of the endorsers. I've got one or two reviews up that I find, but, you know, I just opened the box of books this last week, so I have them in my hand now. We'll have to see what kind of response I get yet.
What are you hoping readers are going to take away when they finish the book?
It depends on the reader. I think that people who have never, ever read Chesterton will have an introduction to him through his biography, through the book, and the analysis, the literary analysis, to understand that there's a spiritual meaning underneath. To students of Chesterton, I think that this book could allow them to mine his work for the connotations. And in my case, the reason I wrote the book was I wanted, as a writer, to understand how to build symbolism into my own story. I think other writers might find this an interesting start to learning how that items in their own lives can become symbols, that they can work consciously into the fiction in order to hint that there's a deeper meaning. In Chesterton's case, that deeper meaning was his conversion to faith in Jesus Christ. And I would love to see how that is applied by other writers, and as I struggle myself to apply that in my fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you working on now?
I am just finishing up my second novel, and it's needing some polishing. It's going to take me a couple of months yet. I'm a slow writer. I would tell you the working title, but it probably won't mean anything, because when it's published, it'll probably be published under a different title. So I'm really looking forward to doing that. And I've got another couple of works, one nonfiction and two fiction, that I've got in mind.
And if people are interested in finding out more about your works, especially Roots and Branches and that, where can they get information about that?
The best place is to go onto Amazon. They can read the review and a little bit of the book. So they can just look up Elk Ink and Roots and Branches, and they'll get the book. But go to my website, which is debelkink.com.
And Elk Ink is spelled E-L-K-I-N-K.
Yeah, so the website is debelkink.com. Or they can email me at deb@debelkink.com.
Great. Deb, thanks very much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Deb Elkink. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selawministries.ca. That's www.selawministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries, email robert@selawministries.ca. Follow us on Twitter @Selaw13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook, or check out the Arts Connection blog at rdaleleslie.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.